Accession number 2008, rail 9.
This Weibo, rail 9.
Me and this German interpreter, he wanted to see a relation of this, so we borrowed a bike. We was in Rhino, I remember. And we went for a ride, and we come to the Dortmund Ems Canal, is it? Where they dropped a bomb on it. Blimey, what a hole that was. That astounded me to see a bomb hole so big. Well, I suppose they dropped it right in the middle of the bridge and the canal, and they'd just blown it so that they emptied the whole canal. You know, that was soon after the war. I don't know whether I got the right place or not, where we went. I think it was there. Yeah, that was another thing that impressed me. Yeah.
But the living conditions were very poor for a lot of the German civilians.
Yeah, well, I mean, living conditions for us were excellent, really. I mean, we had 3 meals a day. I mean, we couldn't grumble, could we? But they had a hard time for that first winter. But by the time I come home the following May, things were, you could see the difference. They'd turned it round, you know what I mean? They were beginning to get a bit of heart and beginning to get things round. I mean, when I come home, I come home from Hanover, we were stationed at Gurden there. And Hanover Station, where we all collected to come out down on this train from Army of the Rhine, all our groups were all collected there. Was the Brigade of Guards band was there, and I played all the latest tunes, and I just that made my day. I've never heard. I've been, you know, we were 5 and 4, but that was pipes and drums, and they had a brass band, but I'd never heard music played like that. They sat there and played on the railway station, and that just made my day, and that did. I'd never heard a band play like that. They did play well. I suppose that was your idea of it. Because they'd never give up hope of keeping you in the army. Now, all the while, every blinking staging post down there where on that railway line where they fed you, you got off the train. You see, you run so many to the, I don't know whether they call it, a staging post, and then you got off and had a night's kip and your food and all that, and every place on your way home, right into Cali, and at Cali when you paraded to get the train to go onto the boat, there was always an officer there waiting where you changed your money, you know, the script money and all marks into pounds, and there was always an officer there trying to get your sign on. And even at Aldershot, when I got to Aldershot, before they you went through the process of getting your book and getting all your money and your demob suit and all that, before they give you your demob suit and give you your money, there was always an officer in there. Well, don't you think it'd be better if you stayed in the army? I mean, you haven't got a job to go back to. You'd do well in the army and all this and that. And I was really fed up to the teeth. So eventually I come, got my old demob suit and trilby hat, and I think, did they give you a raincoat? I should never, I can't remember now. I wish I'd got them now.
So how did the process work then? You came back to Aldershot.
Aldershot was a demob centre, yeah, for me, because there was demob areas. And if you was Scotland, you had to go up to Scotland somewhere, you know, and Midlands, you'd go somewhere else. They had areas where you see, when you They sent you to the nearest team up centre to your home. Aldershot was the nearest one to here. And then they didn't give up. At that time, the scare was in the Russians. They were more frightened of the Russians. And another thing I tell you, I forgot to put this in. We had a Russian officer stationed with our regiment headquarters, and we had to round up all the Russian prisoners of war. And he was there. He was stationed with our regiment headquarters, and rounded them all up, and they put them in these camps. And of course, they had a Russian commandant come over in charge of this camp, and they murdered the commandant. These Russian prisoners. That took the whole of the 50. Of course, we was in the 51st Highland Division then. That took the whole of the 51st Highland Division to entrain all the Russian prisoners and stick them over the border at Elmston. And the tale was that when they got them across the border, they just shot them. And the Russians were so feared of going over that border to there, I reckon that was true.
Did you have any contact with the Russian prisoners of war?
Not really, no. Apart from that, I mean, most of the infantry and that do the rounding up of it. This Russian officer was to be in the area to make sure that all their Russian prisoners of war, because we had an agreement with them that they'd all be returned whether they wanted to or not. And 90% of them didn't want to go back.
Most of the displaced persons, were they from?
Well, they were from Hungary, Poland, Holland, France, displaced persons camps. Took every nation available. We used to have to go and guard them, you see. When the war finished, they made these camps for the displaced persons so they could process them and send them home. We used to have to go and guard them. The troops were responsible for guarding them in the area.
And was that to stop them raiding German farms?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the idea was. I don't think many of them they did do. One or two of them, you get bowed apples in every barrel there. One or two of them did, I suppose, but majority of them were quite amiable, really. Some of them were Dutch, if I remember right. A lot of them are French. A lot of Hungarians. All the nations you can imagine. And they had these control commission blokes that were in there processing them to send them home. You couldn't send them home in bulk, could you? Very well.
Were you working under the control of the control commission?
No. Never under control of me. We were still in the 51st Island Division, yeah.
And had you joined that after?
Well, 5th and 4th, I started out the war as a recce troop for the 51st Island Division when they were across the other side. And of course, when the war finished, they reverted back to the 51st Island Division. But they hadn't been with the 51st Island Division since Dunkirk. They rejoined it after the end of the war.
Are there any other incidents that you remember about your time in Germany?
I remember the town major getting murdered at Gurdon.
What happened there?
Well, I think it was a Pole. He'd murdered somebody, and they took him back to this displaced person's camp and put him in the cell. And somebody slipped him a revolver. the course of town manager, you know, because he was responsible for all their criminal activities, the German prosecutors and all that. But the town major was responsible for taking the line of what he'd done, and he went down to the cells with two of our blacks who were police, and they stood aside and opened the door, and the bloke just shot him. Our blokes done more or less and slammed the door shut. And of course they got him off, but he was dead. That was the town major of Hanover, that was.
And he was a German?
No, British town major. Oh yeah, British town major.
So he was in the military government?
Oh yes, yeah. He was a town major. This pole shot him. And our armourer was going down there, going to rig up a load of bombs, Mills bombs, to blow him out. And he shot himself. Found out afterwards, he shot himself. And this was after the war. It was
there any reason why he shot the town major?
Well, apparently he'd murdered somebody. I heard he was almost dying with tuberculosis. Of course, that was rampant in these places. That's what I heard, but I didn't dig into it. I didn't like to dwell too much on that. Yeah.
So you came back to Aldershot to be demobbed?
Yeah, demobbed, and got on the train, Chelmsford and home. I was demobbed. That was in May 46, I suppose.
And what had you got? You'd got a demob suit?
Demob suit. I think it was a raincoat and a trilby hat, I think it was. Yeah. Well, I don't know, really.
Did you get any gratuity?
Oh, yeah, I got a bit of gratuity. Not like there wasn't enough there. About sixpence a day, wasn't it? Or something, okay. That's not a lot in this day and age. I come home, you see, and I was working. I got a job. I worked in Hoffman's. They made roll of barons. I went and got a job there. I thought, well, got to go round. I went round, see them all, ask them all, and that's the only place I could get. So I got a job there, and I worked there. I was working there.
What were conditions like in the UK in comparison with Germany?
Well, that is my condition up there, I mean, was compared with what we've got now, it was atrocious, really. We was nice, the house was nice, but they wanted a hell of a lot of work going to it, you know, and a lot of money. I did spend a lot of money on it, actually. And I got settled into work, you know, and I got the children come along, because I'd been married in 1943, and we had two children after the war, one in 47, the other one in Christmas 48, and, you know, there was just about almost 2 years apart, but I had them, and I was working along, and I was getting on quite fine, really.
Did you have any problems readjusting back to civilian life after being in the army?
I did, really, because the old boys in the factory were different to the boys in the army, the comradeship. Now, when I went in there, I was a greenhorn. All that time in the army, I didn't know nothing from anyone. Well, anybody, they give me a better 3 or 4 days training or something, and more or less got to pick it up yourself. But in those days, all your money wasn't in your wages, that was in the piece work. They had a BDO system, you see. And I was turning, you know, I was making the cages for the bearings, turning out the cages. Well, I gradually worked my way up, you know, and I got onto the big castings and that. And these old boys might have been in there all the war, you know. They were really old cages. They thought they knew all the angles. and they'd look at you and see you doing something wrong and smirk to themselves and the mates and all that. Well, after a while, that wore off, you know, and gradually, I got confidence. I used to speak to them all, you know, whether I liked the face or not. I always used to. Then me and another bloke got put on night work. And while we was on nights, we got, you see, on this piece work, we got in touch with the tool room. There wasn't anybody on nights, only a foreman. And he was quite a nice bloke. We'd get on with him well, as long as we'd done our work and keep our nose clean. And we got in touch with the tool room. We got some complicated tools mixed. Well, this other bloke done it more than I did, but we got complicated tools so that we could fit them in the lathes that would do two operations in one. And we had all the jigs what held the tools. We had them all machined out so that we could get another tool in, so that when we finished one operation, we'd done the other one, you see. And of course, when they used to put the bonus figures up on the boards, and when they see our bonus figures, they said, that can't be right, that can't be right. And we knocked off at 7 and they started the hot bar 7 in the morning. And these blacks, you see, they thought, well, we'll see what they're doing. Anyway, they used to come in early to try and catch us. But by that time, we'd locked all our stuff away. And they couldn't make it out. We finished and made that amount of money. And that was only by doing little bits and pieces, you know. And the other bloke was a... And the tool room people were making these tip tools so we didn't have to keep resharpening them and that, and we was going through all night doing the same old thing, and that was all inspected and passed and checked in, and that's how we got over that.
Well, you mentioned that money. What was the financial situation like for you?
Terrible, really. It's unbelievable, really, that... When I got married, I think we had £5 between us. And I was in the army, of course, they never make any money in the army. And Daff's mother was a widow who she lived with, and she worked in the factory. Of course, my allowance, what she had in the army allowance, so I don't think she saved anything out of it. I don't blame her, really. But when I come out, I had next to nothing. I had my D-mob money and all that, and a couple of weeks I was out. Most of it went in the pub, I suppose. We went up the Eagle and celebrated for a week or two before we started work. And in them days, you're young, you don't think boy so much about work. We forced to take a job, so I got a job in there. I think the wage was £4. £4.07 and something. And I thought that was quite a wage in them days, £4 something. Yeah. You know, just after the war. So after I'd been in there doing the job for a little while, the old manager called me in the office, and he said, We're very pleased with your progress, Mr. Wyatt Brown. We're going to give you a rise. I thought, yeah, of course, make some money, yeah. Get some more money. Yes, he said, we're going to give you an eighth of a penny an hour rise. That meant I was going to get sixpence over the 48 hours. And that stuck in my mind, that did, an eighth of a penny, and you'd have thought he was giving me the world, eighth of a penny. You see, that eighth of a penny, I was stunned, an eighth of a penny, but of course, I realised that we was working on piecework, and this eighth of a penny over 48 hours was going to be in a shilling a week rise, and well, that was quite a bit of money, you know, in them days. And of course I carried on working for them until I went to Korea. I mean, I was still working there in the August. I got called up in the August. I had the holiday. In those days, you had a holiday. They didn't pay you. You had a week's holiday. No pay. They used to shut the factory, when I can remember right. And I just finished my holiday and went back, and I got the call up papers for Korea.
Can I ask you about the winter of 47?
Yes.
What were conditions like?
Oh, terrible. I mean, I walked to work. I mean, there was no buses running there. I mean, there was very few buses, not like there is today, because after the war, they hadn't rebuilt that. But that snowed, I think, from Christmas. That snowed and froze right up till the end of March. The end of March, there was a thaw and all the rivers flooded. Well, my daughter was born on the 2nd of April. And when the wife came out of hospital, she was at St. John's just down the road, we come home and we took her out in the pram across the common, and we looked all out from London Hill, and when we saw all the river in flood all the way along. I always remember that. Yeah. That was a bad. I used to walk to work, get up and walk to work. That was terrible that winter.
And was there problems with the rationing at that period?
Oh yeah, yeah, because they bread had never been on the ration all the war, had it? It never been rationed all the war bread, but after the war they put it on the ration. Potatoes were another thing they put on the ration. Yes, that was 47. There was still quite a bit. I remember now, John's uncle worked at the local Anzis place. His uncle used to deal up in Covent Garden. And he'd come home, and they had some bananas up in Covent Garden, and he brought bananas in. He said, "Here, Daffy, let her have a banana." The kids had never seen a banana. And this was after 47. Yeah, that things were short. But I mean, in those days, round here, these houses weren't here. And we used to, get some cockerels and feed them up. And we'd have a cockerel for Christmas. I used to go turkey plucking and all things like that, just to get a bit more money to keep going. You was halfway between today and the 20s. You was just beginning to get out of the 20s, you know, where you existed by working hard. And I thought, well, if I work hard and save a little bit of money, which I did do. We never went anywhere much before the children really got older. Before after Korea, when I come back, I kind of got in the swing of it. And we used to go down to south of France and all over the place. We've been all over France in our holidays, up in the Isle of Arran in Scotland and everywhere. You know, I've seen about a bit, but my wife had never been abroad at all. Not before we took her down to Cannes. Then we went to Monte Carlo and we spent a couple of 3 days there.
Were there any other shortages?
Well, I think there was. If I remember rightly, there were British restaurants about in them days. And I used to get my meals at the British restaurant. There was quite a good one in the town near the works. And we used to go up there with a a bloke from another part of the works who was a bookish runner, which was entirely illegal in them days. And we used to go up the British restaurant, and he'd had the paper, and we'd put the bets on with him, and of course we'd lose our pocket money, mostly all. But eventually one time we had a run of luck. I think we had about, I began to think I got part of my money back, if not most of it back, so I packed him back and horses after that. I thought, well, I'll pack him while I got some money. I wasn't a gambling man, you know, really. I never thought I'd get anything out of gambling. I think everything, you know, I'd get in this world, I'd have to earn.